From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in discernible Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development. I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy, I too make nice games.
In this episode, we talk with Kobe Anthony, expert in music for rhythm games, to discuss music and audio workflows. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start.
Are you gonna, like...
That was the worst...
Can explain
worst
yourself or,
yeah, that was weird. This is
like, I was really excited about rhythm games.
Okay.
And I know that's not really the focus for what we're talking about. We're talking about, like,
really?
Music and audio workflows, but just I had some beats in me and they came out. I'm sorry.
To be fair,
I completely said, like, before you got here, that this conversation will likely turn into something about rhythm games, and I apologize in advance.
You know, it's part of the job.
It just happens every time.
Well, we'll get
time.
There. Let's we'll just enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be a real short one.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah, I don't do it on purpose, I swear. It'll be like, I will just be having a conversation about something, and it's like, the way my head connects things,
yep.
It's always like, everything is related to some other thing, and almost everything I do is adjacent
well, that's great.
To
You'll
the
fit
game,
into the show so real fine, because everything connects everything on this show.
Everything
well.
Is everything.
Yeah. Cool. So Kobe, can you introduce yourself and to our listeners?
Yeah, okay, so I am Kobe Anthony. I go by Memo Demo Online. I make music for video games. I make video game inspired video game music for the most part. And I've been doing it for a really long time. And
yeah,
I'm excited to talk about it because I love getting to talk about video. I love getting to talk about sound. I like making noise and hearing noise and talking about noise. So this is awesome.
That's great.
I want to grab onto something you said just there, which you said you make music for video games, but you also make video game inspired music. And so they probably scratch a lot of the same itch, but those are two very different things, right?
So, okay. Those are two very different things, and I can definitely say the whole I make video game inspired video game music thing is a very recent thing I've started saying because at GDC this year I was working as a I don't know if they're still called badgers, but I was scanning badges for the people that were going into a thing, and I was having a conversation with like another CA. I was just having a conversation with this person. And I remember saying that, like, yeah, I don't know how to describe the type of music that I make, because as a composer, there's always this feeling of being like, oh, yeah, the type of music I make, it's just kind of, you know, hard to explain. It's hard to describe when it's like, you just make rock. That's all you do. It's not any different. But the thing is, like, the type of music that I make is supremely strange, and it is very, like, it's very whatever it is. And I realized, you know, it is basically, when you hear it, it's like, this is what a video game sounds like if you're thinking about what a video game sounds like. It's not necessarily what a video game sounds like, if that makes sense. Like,
right.
So yeah. Yeah.
I started saying video game inspired because when I'm like, if I'm making music for a game, right? Like, typically what I'm going to do is say, cool, who are the characters? What's the vibe of the game? Like, what do you need from me? And then you know, work alongside what they want to get the best possible result for what they want. But the whole thing is like, which this could be a whole thing. We might get into it later, but I'm going to try to keep it succinct for now. It's just like, video game music doesn't exist. Like, there just is music, and then there's music that you heard first in a video game. But like, video game music as a thing isn't a thing. Like, even chiptune, it's like, yeah, sure, you could say chiptune is like video game music, but if you're being real, like, it's not. Like, it's just anyone can make chiptune. It doesn't have to be in a video game.
Sure, mm-hmm. Yeah.
The same way, like, orchestral music isn't movie music. Orchestra existed far beyond recorded film. Mm-hmm. Square waves existed before video games existed.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't know how to, like, tie it into what I was saying a second ago, but basically, like, if I'm working with a person to make a game, that's one thing. But if I'm making my own music, when I'm making my own music, typically what I do is I market my music as though I'm releasing a video game. So every time I release an album, I'm like, each album is like a game. And each album is like, if this game existed, this is what the soundtrack would be to this game. But when you listen to it, it is very much so a music album. It's not like you're not listening to a bunch of, like, incidental cutscene music and, like, you're listening to just, like, character theme, stage theme, victory theme, character theme, like, over and over again. Because when you have a game like Sonic, and you're going through Sonic, you're not listening to like if I'm listening to the Sonic Unleashed soundtrack, I'm not listening to the cutscene music. Granted, it's great, it's super good, and I will listen to it when I need that. But typically, if I'm going to Sonic Unleashed, I'm going to level themes. I'm going to the main theme of the game,
right?
And that's the type of stuff that I try to capture when I'm releasing my own music.
Right.
The other thing is that as I'm making that music, I'm often, like, sound designing parts of the game as though it were a game, and those sound effects are part of the song.
Oh, okay.
That's cool.
That is
really
interesting.
That's why I say, like, video game inspired video game music.
Sure.
Yeah, it's, so you're not saying it's like you're borrowing from, like, the audio tropes, I guess, like, that are used in video game music often, like chiptune sounds, or like, here's a coin, or, you know, like, something that's clearly a battle theme, but you're also leaning on, like, the narrative structure of video games to guide what is going to go into your album and the different tracks that you're going to create, which is so cool.
Thank you. I felt like I struck gold when I thought that up, but then I found out, like, a few years into it that that's what Lena Raine did. And I'm like, okay, cool. Well, she's very smart, so at least I had a very smart idea.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen a few soundtracks now at this point that are, like, inspired by, as though they were, like, made for a game, but not actually in a game. But the way that you're going about it, where you're adding the sounds and you're encompassing effectively the soundscape of a video game into the soundtrack itself, I think is really unique. I haven't seen that specific, at least that specific take on it. Maybe that does exist in a certain way, like you were describing, but I haven't seen it. That's
so
cool.
There's a really good artist named Too Mellow who's done a very similar thing of, like, a bunch of Jet Set Radio inspired albums. And now come to a Bomb Rush Cyberfunk coming out last year. One of the songs from that album, I think maybe more than one, but at least one of them is in Bomb Rush Cyberfunk.
Neat.
Which I was like, is that Too Mellow? When I was playing it, and I was like, oh, okay, that checks out. Like, that makes plenty of sense.
Nice.
It's interesting because I also think that this type of thing works. It works better for different situations. Like, I don't have any proof of this, but it feels like, you know, this type of approach to things would work better for more, I don't know. I don't think this approach would have worked if I was trying to get into, like, AAA.
Sure.
Like, I feel like this approach worked because what I've wanted to do is, like, work with indie and work with, like, I just like making people. I like working with people who really want to do a thing and being able to be like, I can help you do this specific thing that you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's indie.
Yeah, right? And it's like, I kind of targeted myself towards that. Yeah. I think, I don't know. The goal when I started doing this was that if I make it convincing enough, then they won't know that it's not a real game. And they'll think that I've just been making music for games already for years. And it worked. They were like, yeah, I was trying to find like footage of this Metro Jammers game, but I can't find it. And I was like, oh, it's not real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a cool idea.
I'm curious. Oh, go ahead, Ellen.
Yeah, I was going to say, this might be a good way to close out that particular part of the topic, but I wanted to say, like, in order to make a soundtrack for a game that doesn't exist and make it work, you still have to have a really deep understanding of how games work so that you make it sound right. So, yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me that someone would listen to him and be like, well, if you can do this, then for sure you can make a soundtrack for my game. Like,
well, it's the difference between craft and art, right? Not as in that they're just different, right? The craft of designing a soundscape in a video game involves like FMOD and
right,
you know, and those tools and that structure and that design and making sure that you know you have all these like dynamic sound effects, but make sure you don't have too many because then it drowns it. Like that's the craft of doing that.
Yeah,
the art of it is the result,
right?
And you can get the art using a different craft, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like you're saying, people just thought, oh, you must know how to do this. They don't actually care how you did it,
right?
Like they just that know that so you true. Know how, right? And so I think that that's a piece of advice I think a lot of people could take to heart when they're thinking about how to market their own skills and abilities.
Yeah.
It's one thing to say like, hey, I'm a C++ programmer. I can program C++. And like you can get a job doing that.
Right.
But if your goal is to say, I want to be a tentacle designer.
Yeah.
Where there's multiple things going on. It's not that valuable to convince somebody that you know how the tool works.
Right.
Because it's kind of the easiest part, or rather it's the part that matters the least. That something happens there and happens well matters.
Right.
But I do see a lot of people early in their careers talk about like how they present themselves and what they're good at. And it's sometimes like, that's great, but that actually isn't aligned with your goal. Your goal is the thing you want to make. And so it is very difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think you might have lucked into a way that you could find an analog that you can express that can get you that. I think it's harder for a lot of other fields, right?
Yeah. I think about this all the time because before I started making music, I actually was like, not before I started, I've been making music for context. I've been making music like using a computer probably since like maybe third grade, like second grade or something. Mm-hmm. I used to just like hang out on my dad's computer and just like open GarageBand and just throw loops together like all day.
Amazing.
Well, for context, how long is that?
How long is that? Yeah, right. I'm 24 now. Okay. So
while
a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a while.
Yeah.
And I remember I've the way I grew up, I had my mom was in a punk band and in like a rock band, and my dad was a jazz piano player. I say was, he's still alive, but he's a jazz piano player and like was in a reggae band. And I just grew up around like a ton of music and like going to punk rock shows and hanging out at pizza places with my mom or going to hotels and listening to live jazz with my dad. Like lots of marinating in music juice.
Yeah.
But as I got older, you know, you're a kid, you want to like try other types of art. And I really liked, I really liked like drawing. And I remember when I was in high school, I was a sophomore in high school, when I decided that I was going to take music like actually seriously, I had gotten to a point with like visual art and with music, to where I was like, okay, I understand what I need to do in each of these fields in order to get to like the level of skill that I want to get in each of these fields. But in order to do that at a rate that I'm happy with, I have to drop one. And like, I have to like go all in on one of them.
Sure.
And then save the other one for later.
Yeah.
Because I don't consider myself someone who knows a ton about the game industry. I feel like as a composer, typically like my max understanding of the game industry is never going to be like even like a beginning game developer, because it's just a different area. Like that's mm-hmm. a bit of an exaggeration, but just like it's different. Like mm-hmm. me as a composer, like or even like lead audio designer for some games, 9 times out of 10, like the people who are hiring me don't even, like you said, they don't even know how I get my computer to make a noise that isn't like a Windows default sound. Like they don't yeah. comprehend that. So like my job and task, like my role in general when it comes to working on games is pretty like its own thing. I actually went to a talk a few GDCs ago about like how to remind your team that you exist as an audio person, which is a very funny talk, but it was kind of real. It was like, yeah, this kind of happens sometimes. Like they just start doing stuff and you're like, whoa, I didn't know that there were like 6 more levels. Like what happened? It's usually not that bad, but like stuff yeah. happens. But I say all that to say that since I don't know a lot about the game industry, I've always just heard like it's competitive, it's hard, it's difficult. So when I was in high school, I was like, okay, if I can just get to a point when I'm undeniably good at one of these two things, then I just have to network and make friends. And as long as I just keep making cool friends, because the other thing is like in high school, I was, I'm not going to say I wasn't popular. I wasn't popular. To be fair, my high school was small. It wasn't hard to be popular. Like my graduating class was 12 students. Like it wasn't, it wasn't difficult for like everybody to know you in high school.
Yeah.
But I definitely will say that like when I was in high school, I was just to myself. Like I would just go home and then lock myself away and just like get on FL Studio and just start like working and like practicing different things. And the thought was, yeah, if I can make myself there were two things that I wanted. I wanted to make music for video games, and I wanted to make friends that knew what I was talking about when I'm talking about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
I figured if I can just get undeniably good at making music, then I will inevitably make friends that are also working hard on something similar to this area. And then maybe later I will get a job working in games and I'll already have friends in that space. So I dropped doing art. It's not that I didn't want to do it, but I was just like, I can't get good at two things as fast as I can get good at one thing.
You prioritized.
Yeah.
Yeah. You prioritized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it worked out. I feel like it worked out, but also like, this was 2018, so like 2 years later, COVID happened, and then like, I was like, cool, well, guess I'll just keep making music, and then I had a lot of free time on my hands, and I was like, cool, I don't know if another global catastrophe will happen soon, so I should take advantage of the time allotted to me now, because once school starts, it's going to be hard, and that's when I started doing like video game album, fake video game album stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't remember where this came from.
Well, I don't remember either, but I was going to ask you the specifics, because the way that you've described, we talked about this a little bit before the show too, the way that you described yourself is that like you feel as though you don't have a good understanding of how video games, like of the industry itself, which I've heard other audio designers express that as well. And I think that, like, to some extent, I can kind of see where they're coming from, because I feel like a lot of times audio designers come into a project partway through development. They're not in the beginning of the development process. And so, like, they create and add additions to the game that definitely enhance it in our core to the game, the experience. But they're also not an afterthought. That's the wrong word. But like, it's separated in a way that I feel is very strange for how video games are typically built.
Right. We did all the work. Yeah. We made the game. Now we got to finish it. So let's add some music.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, you know, it's easy to say like, oh, that doesn't feel holistic, and you know, that's like my jam.
Yeah.
But like, I get why people approach it that way.
Yeah.
You know, there's a practicality to it.
Right. Right.
There are other things that, you know, a lot of times teams will save a lot of like writing
towards
really way late.
That's
and like,
true.
that works for them. Mm-hmm. And like, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that as a process, but like, you know, it can be an efficient way to do it.
Yeah.
But it seems to be really common with music.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Kobe, let's hear directly from you. Like, what part of the stage of the project do you tend to arrive at? And is it later than you like or earlier than you like, or how does that feel?
Yeah.
I could say that typically when I arrive on the scene, like, there's a game there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, they already have a game, and they're basically like, yeah. So they're usually like, yeah, we're almost, like, I can't say almost done, because sometimes stuff changes, but
sure.
Usually it'll just be like, we have a video game here. Oftentimes they already have, like, art and stuff, too, and, like, mm-hmm. animations and, like, a plan, and they're just kind of like, yeah. It just has no audio, so we need to do that, and I guess... Part of that's useful, especially if it's sound effects, because like looking at a game and having just like gameplay happen in front of me and being able to see exactly what things will look like in their finished form helps with sound effects a lot, because I'm sure. Like, cool, I know what I'm writing for. When it comes to music, I think it kind of depends on what I'm being asked for and what the game is. Because like if I make music for a game that's like just a puzzle game, I don't need to see the puzzle. I just need to know what the vibe is. Like, is this a heavy metal puzzle game? Is this a very like chill puzzle game? But if it's something like a RPG, I want to know more about like what the world looks like, what's happening at this point in time. Like, I guess it depends on what role the music plays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think also it's interesting because all of this stuff kind of goes out the window when it goes to rhythm games. Because once you get into the rhythm games are such a weird anomaly, I feel like, in the video game sphere, because it's literally like you can kind of make anything. Like, you can make whatever you want at all.
Yeah.
And as long as they're willing to chart it, you're golden.
Yeah.
Which in some ways it's led to a bit of a fatigue on like the rhythm game type of sound, but I think we're coming out of that now. I feel like there's a lot of cool stuff coming out now. But yeah, it's so weird because it really just depends. Like, if it's a rhythm game, usually they're just like, yeah, we just need a song. Literally make whatever you want as long as it sounds epic and swag. And I'm like, cool, I can do those two things. But other times it's like, yeah, we need a we're thinking about this song for this character. It's going to be this amount of time and this is happening. And it's like, it's cool. I think it depends on the composer too.
Yeah, that's interesting. It definitely sounds like there's a lot of restrictions involved with certain soundtrack. Because I mean, the way you're just describing, like if you're making an RPG, for instance, you'll have this character, and maybe this character's got a certain theme, but the theme has to be a certain length of time, and also has to match the character, so it has to be a certain vibe. And also has to match the entire overarching soundtrack, so it can't be, you know, a jazz song when this is heavy metal or whatever it is. So it does feel like there ends up being a lot of restrictions in a way that might, I'm curious if it feels like that maybe stifles some creativity because there's just too many restrictions. A little restriction is good.
I think so.
That helps you, it does feel like it stifles creativity some.
I totally think so.
Okay.
I am notoriously like, this would be a good idea.
Yeah.
And like, there's no evidence that it would be, but sure. I feel it in my bones that it would be a good idea.
Yeah.
I can say too, with so far with my track record, I have 100% success rate on those ideas.
Okay.
So far. I'm just saying. But yeah, it can feel kind of stifling. I think sometimes you get a little more leeway depending on one, how willing the team is to trust you with what they're doing. And two, it can depend on kind of, you know, sometimes it's not up to them. Sometimes it's up to like someone, like they're just the person in the middle and they're just asking you, like it's not up to them.
Sure.
But short answer, yeah, I feel like there's sometimes, honestly, there was a project I was working on just recently where they wanted a type of music for this game that was good. Like, I could do it, and it was fine. It was just so obvious.
Okay.
For me, which is super biased, but like, I don't care. I'm biased. Like, I love when someone shows me a game and then they go, what business does this song have in this game?
Oh, like, sure. Yeah.
It's like, it's always cool. I've never once had that happen and then been like, oh, that really destroys my immersion. Like, no, it's cool. Final Fantasy 16, random hip-hop track. That didn't destroy my immersion. I thought it was sick. Yeah. Like, I think it's awesome. The same thing, Pictionary. Is it Pictionary on the NES? Where it's just this shredding jazz solo and, like, the title screen. And it's like, this is an NES game. I'm not like, oh, this doesn't really fit the theme.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? It's like all of these things are important. People recognize the soundtrack. Especially if the soundtrack is bad, it'll grade on you and you won't want to play the game anymore, right? But, like, if you have good music while you're playing the game, it helps you stay motivated to play the game. I have been playing Balatro. And it has one song in it, but that song is a bop and it just gets stuck in your head. Oh. And then you just think about that song when you're about to go to sleep, then you're like, dang, I should play Balatro. And then you wake up and you're like, oh, the song's still stuck in my head. Then you go back to the game. It really makes an impact. Like this music.
Yeah.
It changes things.
Well, I'm hitting on that.
Yeah.
That disconnection that we said unexpected. Tracks in unexpected contexts. I think as humans, we experience so much in combination with so many other things.
Yeah,
and we make patterns and we have things that go together as a way to like as the language of our lives, right?
Right.
And so when we put two things together that we are not familiar with, then that itself is a new thing, even if the two components are not.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like you see a bird out the window, fine, but if you see it through the vignette of binoculars, suddenly that bird is different.
Yeah, right? Sure.
And so the context is really relevant. And so there's something to be said about like spinning the wheel and just seeing what third thing results from two things.
Yeah.
How deliberate you want to be with that and how like open to the, you know, the fate of chance is really that's to taste, I guess.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always talking about like having intention with what you do.
Right.
But part of that intention can be to see how it works.
Yeah.
Rather than to know in advance how it's going to work.
Right.
And especially if it's a combination that is not familiar.
Yeah.
That's really valuable. I think the question then is what's the limit of that?
Okay.
Like, if you say, like, oh, this is a pretty chill puzzle game, I'm going to put some heavy metal on it. Like, that's an interesting idea. You could do it, right? But at what point are you doing it for the novelty?
Yeah.
Like, is there a limit? And what do you need to do to make it feel not just new, but valuable?
So what I think is that when it comes to doing something for the novelty, I feel like it's like a threshold. Yeah. Like, eventually it's like, okay, I get it. Like, you can put two things that don't go together. But if you just keep going past the I get it point, it hits a new level of like, this is just a new thing. It's like when someone's committing to a bit and then it gets old.
Yeah.
But then, like, they keep doing it and eventually it becomes funny again because it's like, okay. I feel that same way about game. Granted, again, I'm so biased, but like, I just feel like that's the case. Like, if I play Not in the Groove, which is an awesome, I told you this is going to happen, but it's just what comes to mind. Awesome rhythm game where it is themed as like DDR, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's made so that like you can have a bunch of mod charts. No two mod charts in Not in the Groove are the same.
Okay.
There will be things from notes going backwards to notes going upside down to suddenly you're not even playing DDR, you're playing WarioWare to suddenly all of the notes are on like a 3D rotating cube and that cube has different notes on each side.
Yeah.
Like, but the thing is, after watching like two or three, you're like, okay, I get it. It's impossible. But then you see people play it and you see the community of people that play it. And then it's like, no, it's not that it's impossible. It's that it is possible. And they just went like so far that at this point it turns into like, no, this is just how Not in the Groove is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. It's a property that's difficult to describe, but it's like that Sideshow Bob running in the rakes thing. They did it like 50 times, you know. The first 10 times, you're like, ha, ha, ha. And then the next 20 times, you're like, okay, I get it. And then, yeah, it gets funny again. Because
just keep going.
Because they're like, why are you doing this? I guess it's almost a little bit like an awkward funny, but like it works still.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Although I would say find that Simpsons clip and actually count how many rakes he steps on.
Oh, good question.
It's not quite as many as you think.
Well, yeah, it's not 50, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's fair, that's fair.
Yeah, but that idea exists,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And that's separate from the experience of it. And that, I think, is part of why that going too far and why it's funny again. Is because it transcends its own context,
yeah,
and becomes something you are just not experiencing, but something you're thinking about.
Yeah, yeah.
You're given the space to just design it yourself, to think about it, to reflect on it, not just from the time of the awkwardness, but just the fact that it's lost all meaning, and then it's up to you now to give it meaning.
That's a good point. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess in some ways, music and humor are probably related. I'm making this up on the fly, but I think that there's an aspect of humor that is like, sometimes it's a bit of a shock factor, because it's like, haha, Churchill Bob stepped on a rake and hit himself, and that's just kind of shocking, and that's part of the humor of it. Mm-hmm. But like you're saying, Mark, as it happens more often, you're able to see it and understand it and analyze it, and you start recognizing other aspects of it that you find are funny, partly because the show literally forced you to do it. But I think there's a part of that. So like, I think this Not in the Groove thing that you're talking about kind of has aspects of it. You're experiencing all of these very strange rhythm game mechanics, and they feel weird, but because like the modders are giving you opportunities to experience it, you start understanding that better, and then you can start appreciating it for other reasons aside from just the shock factor of it. That really makes sense. Oh, I'm glad I tied it all together. I didn't think I would get there.
I think that another thing, too, is just, like, selling it, you know? Like,
yeah, there's a sincerity to it, right?
Yeah, like, if you just put a heavy metal song over Tetris, then sure. Like, it's gonna be like, okay, sure. But if you, like, go full send and, like, you have a thing where it's like, if this song is playing, then, like, instead of these particle effects, it's these particle effects. The announcer says these lines instead of these lines.
Yeah.
Like, if you really sell it, you can kind of get away with anything. And I feel like video games as a whole, like, they could benefit from trying those things, which is kind of hard to do, especially like if you're a smaller team and you don't have the money to like pay a composer to write a song that you might not use. I do think, though, that there's some real merit in leaning in. It's like, yeah, this idea is a good idea. It's only going to be a good idea if everybody does it. Like, if you, or not if everybody does it, but like if
everyone commits
support
to it,
the idea. You have to believe, you have to commit. Kingdom Hearts, if you wrote out what Kingdom Hearts was on a piece of paper and gave it to someone, Kingdom Hearts would not work unless they committed as hard as they committed to Kingdom. Like, Mickey Mouse gets knocked out, and everybody is acting like that is the end of the world seriously. And, like, that's what makes it good is subjective, but popular.
Yeah, I would say. Popular is a good way of describing it, yes.
Because it's just, like, the commitment to what it is.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Like, if you look at a children's TV show, no children's TV show, you could very easily just cross your arms and be like, a dude in a suit, but like if you're just willing to go there for just a little bit, it's real.
It's a bunch of blue heelers in Australia living a life.
Yep,
their neighbors are also dogs.
Yeah, it's real. It's serious. Yeah. There's serious stuff that happens.
Steven, quick, we just ordered some noodles.
We did.
And they're making it now.
Yeah.
We have just enough time to record one or two bluers.
Okay.
let's get through them. Go.
All right. Okay, Discord. Discord's cool. There's a nice community that listens to all of our episodes and talks about really fun topics that sometimes have to do with our episodes, but maybe they don't.
I don't believe it. Convince me.
Just recently, Lane was talking a whole lot. Lane is a a listener of the show, has been talking a lot about kingmaking and like all the specifics of what kingmaking is, good and bad, all those kinds of things. Talked about that recently. It was fun.
So you're telling me that listeners, engaged listeners, can add extra content that isn't even in the show?
Yes, and it's free.
Incredible. Where might I go to find that?
Nicegames.club/discord.
Ellen, what was that?
Beloved listener Lane posted basically a thesis.
Yes.
On our Discord, which you can find at nicegames.club/discord.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, I have a question about this, and this kind of relates to workflow. So maybe this is a good way to transition to some of the more technical stuff. But my first question isn't super technical, and that is, like, what you're talking about is a very emotional process, right? And I love that. I love experiencing that process. I love helping to guide that process. I love helping like having that process led by someone else as I'm going through it. Like, it's just a collaborative creative experience, but it requires a lot of experimentation. So what does that look like in an audio format, right? So if you're trying to do something daring with the music and with maybe the sound effects, like, and you're coming in with a game that's already partially made, how do you push that envelope? How do you experiment? And how do you get people on board with where you're taking all that?
So that's a really good question. I think that what I have found has helped me a lot is just I am personally really, really comfortable with the DAW that I use. Make stuff pretty quick. Like, I can at least get an example of something down, provided that my brain is working with me and not against me.
Yeah,
sure. I can get ideas down. And I have a lot of kind of like external tools, like for as I'm drafting ideas. Because I mentioned, like, I'll do sound design while I compose. So, like, I have a rolling sampler on my master channel. This sounds so, like, messed up, but I have a sampler just on my master channel, and every sound that comes through my computer, period, with the exception of Discord audio, is being at all times recorded into my DAW. And at any point in time, if there's some weird combination of like, oh, that notification was in key with the song, or like, oops, that YouTube video was playing but it kind of synced up, I just have it like right there. And that helps, because I have like, if I'm giving like multiple drafts and multiple ideas of a song, I think what really helps with kind of iterating on designing those different things is sort of being like, hey, here are four different ideas. If you don't like those ideas, I can change them because I'm not like emotionally attached to them. I think also the other thing is I make music like outside of music for video games. That's kind of like the thing that I do, with the exception of playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, is make music. Because of that, if I'm working on a song for a game and they don't want it, I'm like, cool, I have an album. Like, I have an album's worth of songs that I could finish personally now.
Yeah. Okay.
And I will finish.
Mm-hmm. So, like, what you're talking about essentially is like rapid prototyping. You're like rapid prototyping music.
Yeah.
And they know you've got like a body of work out there. They know who they hired, right? So they know what you're capable of creating, and they're going to probably be willing to lean in with you. Mm-hmm. Into this unknown forest of sound. And then you just like work with what's happening in your head and what's happening like in your environment and on your computer, and you just rapid prototype tunes. There you go.
I'm a huge believer of like, this song just might suck, and like if it sucks, then I will just make a better song next time. Like, I say that all the time. I feel like there's no real reason in, like, you know, really trying to nail a sound, because that it's music is so subjective, and the way people interpret things is so different. It's like amazing that as human beings, anybody is friends with anybody, because like the experience of being alive is so different for every individual. So when it comes to something subjective like music and whether or not this like fits the vibe, it's really just kind of, I just send what I think. And if they don't like it, like, yeah, just rapid prototyping. Learning your way around a DAW really helps. Helping your DAW work with you really helps.
Well, it wasn't just that, but you also described it like you were recording a bunch of sounds that were coming out of your computer at all times. And so, yeah, like, you get inspiration from anywhere, and then you can listen back to that inspiration and think and reflect on why that was interesting to you in the moment. That allows you to come up with something else that maybe relates to that or maybe doesn't, but it all still works, right?
Reducing friction in the workflow.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So you can work faster.
Like, that's been super helpful for me, especially because, like, the type of music that I would say I specialize in is very, like, upbeat, fast, anime-inspired, very sample-focused. Yeah. Like, I will make the brightest, most upbeat, energetic song you've ever heard. And a lot of it, like, I'm super inspired by, like, Hideki Naganuma and, like, Plus Tech Squeezebox. Like, just people that, like, their music is so many things in one thing. So, like, yeah, I have all this stuff coming through my computer, and there's always just the, like, nothing is lost. There's just the, if I make 60 different songs, and none of them work until we get this one idea, then I have 60 different things that I can sample into a song made out of 60 other songs, and then just like keep it moving.
That's like one of the things that, like, when I've coached rapid prototyping, which is more about like mechanics, but basically, like, you want to spend enough time on it to convey where you're headed with it, and like get something in front of people so you can validate your direction, but not so much time on it that you don't feel bad throwing it away. But the cool thing about what you described is you don't have to throw it away. Like, it can just become something else. That's really cool. But also, like, having worked a little bit with like a couple DAWs, the idea of being so good at one of them that you can do that is like mind blowing.
Yeah.
I can definitely say, I appreciate that. I appreciate you saying that. I usually don't. It's always these situations that I'm like, oh yeah, I do work kind of fast. But yeah, I think that's definitely, but I appreciate that. That's very nice.
Well, one of the things it does is it gives you the ability to kind of, and you were saying it earlier, work around Ellen's question, which is what happens when the game is sort of far enough along and you can only push it so far. And then if they don't, it's algebra, right? You solve for X, right? They have a solution and they have a part. You need to come up with the part that adds to it to, you know, and now if your thing doesn't quite solve for X, then they can change the answer to let you solve for X.
Yeah.
But if they're not interested in that, then you have these workflows that allow you to make use of that effort. And so it helps you in those situations. So it doesn't feel as much of a struggle. But then of course there's the other side of that where you're not solving for X. You are, those things are being cooked together, and then the result doesn't matter, right? So we talked about that earlier. So my question is, do you find yourself, maybe you have more experience with the solve for X, and then you have all these extra material, and that can be really satisfying. But if you had it your way, would you prefer it the other way, where everything you make contributes to the whole of the project you're on? But then that would mean you wouldn't necessarily end up with all this extra material with which to recycle, like Kit Kats are made out of Kit Kats.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Okay. So in a perfect world, everything I make would get used, even if it's just like a sound test and you can hear like unused songs. That's been my favorite thing about games forever. Like,
sound tests are great.
Sound tests are great. Like, trophy rooms are great. Like, being able to see all the concept art and sketches. Like, if a game came with like just PNGs of like Discord conversations or Slack conversations.
Wow.
Yeah. I would love it.
Like, that's brilliant.
That's my favorite thing. To be like, oh, wow, that was an inside joke with them. That's really cute.
Yeah.
Like, so in a perfect world, yes. And I say that probably different for a lot of people. For me personally, I don't mind because, like the way I work is so scattered. Mm-hmm. Like for some context and for some reference, basically, I have the two tools that I use the most in any of what I do are XO and Rolling Sampler.
Okay.
Rolling Sampler is just it's like $10. It's like a sampler that just is always recording the most recent like 2 minutes of whatever's going through it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever want it, you just click and drag and highlight whatever section you want and just drag it into your DAW. It'll automatically put it in a folder. You can just choose where that folder is. And I just have that folder, like my DAW's reading that folder. So it's just constantly updating. I put XO on my master for everything. And I put XO on whatever track I'm using for sound design, just because FL Studio does not have resampling. FL Studio has Edison, which is awesome, but slow. And Rolling Sampler is awesome and fast. The second thing that I use the most is XO, which is basically a plugin that takes, you like give it a set of folders. In that set of folders, it takes all of the samples that you have for the most part. There are some samples it doesn't grab, and I actually need to switch to a similar plugin that does exactly what I want. But long story short, it takes all of those samples and it organizes them into a huge scatter plot where it's color coded. So like all the red dots are going to be like your kicks, and all of the blue ones are your snares, and
oh, wow.
Light blues miscellaneous. The closer the dots are to each other, the more similar the sounds are.
Okay.
And then the further apart, the different. Also, there's like a whole thing that I really like where if you have a sound that you like, there's just a similar sounds thing on the bottom that will pick like other similar sounds. This also doubles as a drum machine. So I can make loops inside of XO off of all of the random samples that are jumbled up inside, and it will always be different. But I just, instead of telling it to read from some folders, I just told it to read from my entire D drive on my computer. So it's just like every piece of audio, period, that is ever created in any capacity is read in XO, and it is constantly being refreshed. Every time I make a new sample or Rolling Sampler, it gets thrown into the mud pie. And so many times, I want to say there hasn't been a song in the past 2 years where I haven't done this. I will just go into XO and like swing my mouse around all crazy and just be like snare, 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 snare. One of these will work. And if it doesn't, I've got a bajillion other ones.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is because it's not scanning like the names of stuff. It's just scanning what it sounds like. A lot of times I get sounds that aren't like appropriate, I guess. Like, I'll need like a kick and it'll be like someone dropping a chair on the floor, but it sounds like a kick and I'll just use it as a kick.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of situations like that. So I'm honestly, if I were working on a game, and there's also, this is where the sound design thing comes in.
Yeah.
I do so much processing and in a bunch of different ways when I'm making a song. When it comes to making music, I view like everything as either percussion or melodic. There's no other thing to me. When I'm using XO, it's like, this is percussion and I can shape it however I need to shape it. So if I use a sound that I originally made as a sound effect for something in a song, by the time you hear it in the song, you will never know that it's there. Like you will have never had any idea that that was a thing.
Yeah, that it was a chair.
Yeah, that it was a chair.
Yeah.
There's so many times when I'll like take a, I don't know. There was something I did a while ago where it was like, I was making a lead and we have a cat who she never meows unless she goes and gets one specific toy. So I like threw the toy on the floor in front of her and like waited around for like 10 minutes until she got it. She started meowing and I recorded that and then went back and like layered that meow with a bunch of other stuff and processed it. And like, you would never know. You would literally never know that that was a cat.
Yeah.
there's all sorts of stuff like that in a bunch of the stuff I do.
That's cool.
Yeah, and that's there's like aesthetic choice, like sampling as an art form is a lot is the notion of like remix culture, and that identifiability of samples is important to a certain aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
But you're describing a different process, which is this is raw material.
Yeah,
and that really aligns with what you're describing your workflow, which is just like how can you work fast? How can you go from like idea to expression as quickly as possible? You need all those things in front of you that you can click or wave your mouse at. To get going, as literally, soon as possible. Yeah,
yeah, because there's a huge difference between like sampling as part of like I'm taking this song and recontextualizing it for my song, and then like I've always called what I do like micro sampling, I guess, because there's just so many tiny little snips of this or that or this or that or this or that, to where like it's a completely different thing. It's not even like recontextualizing. It's just like this instrument no longer serves whatever purpose it initially was supposed to serve. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was something, what did you just said something that reminded me of something, but I don't remember what it was.
Quick, check your sampler.
Yeah, right. It was like, you said, what did you just say? It was awesome.
I don't remember.
That's
Mark fine. Says a lot of awesome things, so
I was gonna say it's just another day for Mark.
Not keep track.
Yeah.
I like what you said about micro sampling, though. When you said micro sampling, like I really like that, and it was like transformative sampling. You know, like it's you're giving it a different purpose. You're like putting in some adapters and taking the U.S. outlet and or plug in and putting in the European outlet and seeing what sparks.
Yeah. I've really been a big fan of that because growing up, I was super into, like, I got super into, like, hardcore electronic stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was a ton of, there's a ton of hardcore electronic stuff where they're just taking tiny little bits and pieces from this or that or this or that or this or that. I remember as a kid, it was the only thing that could, like, keep my attention because I was just, like, I was so bored with stuff. That's not because I'm cool, it's because I have ADHD and I just got like super bored listening to like something that I could tell when the next thing was gonna happen. And as I started making music, you know, I feel like as you start making music, you eventually just like calm down more and more and more with what you make, but I've always liked to keep that element of just like you never really know what you're listening to, I guess. Like,
yeah,
you just know it sounds cool, and it always sounds different. Like I can make the same drum beat with XO 20 times and it'll be different every time because it's going to use a slightly different everything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When I'm making music on my computer, I'm typically making electronic music. And even if I'm not making electronic music and I'm making something more organic sounding, I'm processing it digitally. Like there's no getting around. I use a computer to make music. So any opportunity that I have to really invite that type of just like spontaneousness into it,
yeah.
of like this won't always sound the same. Like I have a modular synth that I have hooked up, and a lot of times I'll just hook it up to my like interface to record stuff, and I just don't listen to it. I'll like watch an episode of a show and just keep turning knobs, and then after like 30 minutes I'll scratch through the mud pie and find stuff I like. And I don't know, it's all about like taking the small little bits of stuff, because there it also that helps reduce the risk. Like we were talking earlier about like working on a game and we need to come up with an example. It's like I don't have to go, oh, I spent hours sound designing this sound and I really thought it would be cool to like use this type of pad. It's like, whatever, it's disposable. I'll save the time. I usually save that like long intentional, because there is a place. There's definitely a place and time for like that really intentional, like getting things just right. Like that pad sits in the mix just the right way.
Sure.
But the time and place that I find really that where it's best spent is like working on my own stuff, or like working with someone who's given me a very clear set of like what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're kind of brainstorming, then it's like, You can bridge the gap without it being like perfectly mixed and that saves me the stress of being like, oh, I hope they like this. I will have lost 4 hours of my day.
Well, you've got other spaces for that. Like you're saying, you could put a lot of that really specific energy into your soundtrack. where you're in control of that in specifically, or like you said, if you've got the space in certain projects that you're working on too.
I just think like specific directions call for specific actions.
Yeah.
Broad directions you can do. I mean, it's about figuring stuff out, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what prototyping is.
That also like gears us into, I would say, the sort of last big sort of area that we want to talk about, which is interfacing with the teams. So the, if you know, that idea of like, let's just see what works, let's dude it out quick, and let's not worry about getting it right, let's make the, even the process partially disposable. And then like, who is your point of contact on various game projects? Who provides that feedback? Is it, you know, is it different per project? Are some people more hands-on and some people more hands-off? Did you ever find yourself in a situation where someone says, oh, this would be great if only it were just this little tweak, there's my feedback, and you're like, well, that part of the process wasn't documented, so do you ever find yourself in those situations? And like, how does that work on the different projects you worked on?
So I found myself in, I feel like, all of those situations. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of answers to this. I think ultimately, like, I found myself in a lot of those situations. A lot of the answer is just like, it depends, which is kind of like a like lame answer. But it's like, I've had clients who I work with and they're super, super, super just like, could you change that note there and then maybe resolve to this chord instead of this chord and then this sound here? And I'm like, do you want to make the song? Like, I could just go. You could just make it. But, like, I can also find, like, a way to appreciate just, like, they're being direct. Because then it's like, mm-hmm. I don't have to figure out what to do. And, you know, the way the response to that is also, it just varies based on, like, it really varies based on the person. Like, if they're being really kind of like distant and demanding, it's like, well, I'm still, you know, I'm never going to be mean, because at the end of the day, I'm still helping them bring to life something that they want and they trust me with what they're doing, which I will be forever grateful for, because making music for video games is a dream. And regardless of having the most frustrating or annoying client, I am always going to be just thankful to even have the opportunity to have an annoying client. Mm. That being said, sometimes they can be kind of annoying, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'll do that thing that you want. It's really specific. What really hurts is when it doesn't sound good. Like, what really hurts is when they're like, I really think that this change would be better, and I'm just kind of like, okay, and then I do it. I'm like, wow, this sounds objectively worse, but it's not my project. Like, maybe that's the point. Maybe that's what they're going for, or maybe they just like it. Like, objectively is a really... really bold way to put that, because like, it's not objective. Mm-hmm. It's objective to me, but like, I don't know, I listen to a lot of music that people would say is objectively bad. I remember at GDC literally this year, I woke up and I had my earbuds on because I was just like, I gotta get there early and I'm super excited, but I gotta wake up. And my friend was like, what are you listening to? And I was like, I don't know. So I looked at my phone and it was I don't know if y'all know this song, but there's a song called 777, and it's at 777 BPM. And then there is a 7,777 BPM remix of that song. Oh my
goodness. Why?
I was listening to that one because I swear it grows on you. Like, the first time I heard it, I was like, this is a lot. But it grew on me, and it turned into kind of like my getting up in the morning doing stuff song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That song is, I know, it's objectively garbage to a lot of people. So I feel like that's when it's tough. I will say, I have also, though, I've had clients who are so cool. They're so cool. They're just like, hey, look, do whatever you want. Just when you finish, say that I can use it and let me have the right to use it and tie my character to it. And I'm like, anything? Like, we could just do anything? Like, I've had people be like that, and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of it really... I've been saying, I feel like, talking about a lot of feelings today.
It's Nice Games Club. You can talk about Games your feelings. Club.
Yeah, we can talk about our feelings here.
Yes.
I've had a lot of those situations. I feel like sort of navigating those situations can be different. I've had some... I don't know. at the end of the day, I just want to help people do whatever it is they're trying to do, and separating myself from it. Like, I think I may have had a harder time doing that if I didn't already make my own stuff, but like, I make my own stuff for fun. And when I'm working with people who may be a bit bossy, it's kind of like, well, like, they're bossy, but they still came to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, sure. For whatever reason, they heard my music and said, this is someone I'd be willing to pay to make something for me. And typically, you know, I don't remember what the quote is, but it's basically like, don't think someone's being mean if they could also just be dumb. Like, I don't remember what the quote actually is, but it's way more intelligently put than whatever I just said.
Sure.
Like, I just try to think that. I'm like, they're not being mean. They might just not know. Like, they might not know how to communicate this. I think also that's the thing with audio is, like, music is such a difficult thing to explain with words. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, kind of corny to say, but, like, it's real. Like, when I'm doing sound design work for someone, we always hit this point where they're just kind of like, I'm going to say what I think this sounds like, and I'm just going to cross my fingers that you know what I mean. And they'll be like, could you make this sound like squishier and also like more yellow? And I'm like, yeah, sure, I can do that.
Love
and
it.
I'm like, I think this is squishy and yellow. And they're like, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted.
That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah, there's a lot of funny verbiage that goes around once you get into the territory of like describing sounds, which it's fun. I want a wall of like all of the quotes that I've had of people saying, can I have blank? And it's just like funny stuff.
That would be a fun coffee table book.
Yeah.
Honestly.
That's true.
Yeah. That's our show. You can find Kobe online at Memo Demo, all caps, on YouTube and Spotify. The website is memodemo.zip. That's right, .zip. For show notes and additional links from today's conversation, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on social media at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and programming in the movies. Wonder what that is, like sitting in the movies and doing programming, or I don't know, I'll have to look at it. Reply on the various platforms or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual and share your opinions and stuff, you can stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we'll be looking at working on multiple projects and pivoting. Those are two separate things. But that's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. I have a dog here that wants my pizza. I have pizza and then a dog right off my elbow, and she's like pointing at the pizza like, excuse me, excuse me.
How do you make passwords that are strong enough so no one will guess them, you won't forget them, and find a way for everyone in your company to do the same without ever needing to reset them? Sounds impossible unless you have 1Password. Companies lose hours every day just from employees forgetting and resetting passwords. A single data breach costs millions of dollars. 1Password secures every sign-in to save you time and money. Any device, anytime. 1Password lets you securely switch between iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC with convenient features like autofill for quick sign-ins. Protect your global workforce with simple security, easy secret sharing, and actionable insight reports. Right now, listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/runoftech for your growing business. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/runoftech today.